Welcome to A Better HR Business, the podcast that looks at how HR consultants and HR tech firms grow their businesses and how they help their employers to get the best out of their people. Remember, for show notes and downloads, go to www.getmorehrclients.com/podcast. That's getmorehrclients.com/podcast. Okay, let's get started.
Hello, welcome back to the show. Great to have you along. And I'm really looking forward to today's conversation with Michael Barris. Michael is a fascinating guy. He is a speaker, best-selling author, transformational speaking and storytelling coach, which is a bit of a mouthful, but the impact he's having on people and professionals, organizations throughout the States and beyond is really impressive. So I'm really looking forward to this. So before we get into the who and the what, Michael, thanks very much for joining me today.
Man, it's great to be here. I'm an admirer of your show. You got style. I like that.
Thank you very much. I believe you're in New Jersey somewhere.
Correct.
Which is very exciting to hear because I have tickets to Bruce Springsteen coming up this year. So I guess he's your next door neighbor or something, right?
He is a figure seen around the area a lot. I've seen him about two or three times. I've seen him in a coffee shop. I've seen him on a sidewalk having dinner with somebody.
Oh, nice.
He shows up at concerts sometimes.
That's so cool. Oh, I love it. So yeah, you've got a wonderful book, which is How to Become a Super Speaker, The 7 Principles for Speaking with Confidence and Connecting with Audiences. And there's something I'd really love to dive into today for the audience here is around how you help teams and audiences of business owners and organizations on how to get prospects to open up about their pain points and their challenges by leveraging the power of storytelling and public speaking to pave the way for more conversions and a revenue boost. And the reason that I find that so interesting is that it's important when people are trying to sell services, products and services, and in the HR sphere, but in any industry, it's important to understand what are their challenges and pain points and things like that, and then show how you can get to the other side, you know, the better outcomes. But it's probably gotten a bit more difficult over the years, and with the pandemic and LinkedIn gets so crowded and people don't want to hear about, tell me about your pain points all the time. So it's interesting to hear you combining storytelling with this approach to help businesses grow. So can I throw it to you? Can you give us a little summary of the book or the thought process around how you can get people to open up about their pain points and challenges by leveraging the power of storytelling and public speaking?
You're totally right that I maintain it's the legacy of the social media era, which is that people are getting pitch slapped, as they say, so frequently that they develop this superpower. They can smell a pitch coming a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
How often have you been there? Someone says, "Hi, Mike, what's your biggest challenge in 2024? You got to get this, that you're not going to go on a date with somebody and just ask them their most intimate question right off the bat. You have to earn the right to have access to closely guarded private information, because that's how we feel about our businesses, right?
Yeah.
So you need to at least show a willingness to engage the other person in a genuine conversation. And if you can't think of the questions, you shouldn't be there doing it. And of course, we see people doing it all the time. But how do you get to their pain points? Well, you have to have a genuine interest, and you have to find it in yourself, something you can genuinely admire or have in common. You know, Ben, that's a really nice looking shirt you have. Love to get a shirt like that. I mean, I know that sounds a little bit obvious, but it starts, "Oh, thanks. Yeah, I picked it up on sale at, you know, at X. That's interesting. Whereabouts is that?" And you try to make the conversation head toward a story with small talk. So next to your best friend, next to your storytelling ability, is your ability to make small talk. So look for commonalities. And there is some truth in the expression that flattery will get you everywhere. If there's something you genuinely like pour it on, you know, "I think you have a really musical voice, Ben. I've seen a lot of people who don't speak nearly as well as you do," which is true. Now, you may feel a little more inclined, you'll tell me about, because you feel proud about this. "And yeah, I learned about my speaking ability." I said, yeah. "Well, how did you ever get from speaking into hosting a podcast?" And then we go into that. And then eventually I see something like that. You know, it reminds me of a fella I knew, and now I segue into a story where I'm telling the story honestly. Now, when it comes to telling the story, this is still a bit of a public speaking skill in itself. If you're going to tell a story, you have to remember that you're a performer, you're speaking to an audience, and audiences expect performers on stages, which is what I am, for better or for worse, to put on a show. So I have to really throw myself into telling you this story as if I mean it with all my heart and soul, and then I want you to feel entertained or informed or delighted, whatever it is. Because the more I can stir you up emotionally, the more you're going to be receptive to what I'm going to do when I finish the story, which is say this, Ben, do you have a similar story like that in your background? And you may say, yes, I do. And because I've done my homework and warming you up, now you may tell me something. Or you may not, which is the case that may go back to working small talk. Now, I know this sounds like a lot of work, but that's the way it is. If you want to really get people to talk and not just make it about cold pitch slapping, you got to do your work. So that's basically how you get to the pain points.
So a couple of things. The small talk stuff, if people's radar is up, you know, that they can detect the BS detector or whatever. He's only saying something nice about my shirt because that's what a salesperson does, you know. So what are your thoughts around that?
Good point. And it's true. If you don't speak with warmth, genuine warmth, they're going to think, this guy's trying to get to know me pretty fast here. Or they're going to think, what's this guy's angle? Why is he saying these nice things to me? So it's true that you have to make it as authentic as you possibly can. And if it's coming from your heart, the other person cannot question what you are genuinely feeling or radiating, as long as it's real. That's the truth. So the more you can find that sweet spot in yourself, which produces a genuine compliment or a genuine sharing of something or a genuine identifying of some commonality, the more you're going to click with them and you'll get that entry into that personal area where they will share back the story.
Got it. Yeah. It's a bit like when we were chatting at the start there and asking about Springsteen and Jersey and stuff. So there's a connection that could potentially continue down the line. But the other thing I was wanting to ask, you had quite a long career as a journalist, and here you are talking about storytelling and getting that emotion. So was that a difficult jump for you to make? Because isn't journalism all about the truth and the facts? And here you are talking about stories and emotions.
But they're all stories. Journalism is stories. And it's just that, look, you see different news organizations. They're all working with maybe essentially the same facts, but they're all giving you different versions of the truth, as it were, because they're telling their story in the way they need to reach their audience. And I have some insight onto this, that news organizations are businesses. They are trying to sell the cars that they're advertising. They are trying to get people to buy the clothes that are being promoted on their websites. So there's an audience. So you have to tell that story in a way to appeal to that certain specific audience. Now, this is the reality of the news business, that they all have their markets. And they are crafting their stories to appeal to their markets. That's what I'm trying to say. That's the bottom line there. Make sense?
Yeah, yeah. When you're talking about getting people to open up about their pain points and challenges by leveraging the power of storytelling and public speaking, I guess you can't do that when you're doing public speaking. Because part of what we do through the HR Business Accelerator is we help client companies in the HR sector to go out and partner up with other organizations. And sometimes that involves speaking and training and stuff like that. But I'm guessing speaking from a stage or a Zoom call or a webinar, that they can't necessarily get their prospects to open up about pain points when they're talking to a group. Is that true? Or how would they leverage that angle?
Well, the idea is that you have been so effective speaking from the stage is that you have people coming up to you saying, hey, I really loved your talk. You really opened up some insights for me. I would love it if you would come speak to my group or my company or my organization. Do you coach? That kind of thing. Because you do have to resonate from the stage. I do essentially try to work transformations from the stage when I'm speaking. As you mentioned, I have a series of principles here, and there's a tool I've created from it that I share with potential leaders of organizations and other officials, how to address the shortcomings in communication within the organization through these principles.
You've mentioned the 7 principles for speaking with confidence, connecting with audiences. I would recommend people to check out the book, get a copy of the book, and actually dive into it in much greater detail. But do you want to give us a quick overview of those principles?
Absolutely. Now, my big idea is that the audience is everything. You ignore that at your peril. Now, you may think, well, yeah, I mean, isn't that the case? Well, what happened is that years ago, we had the ancient Greeks who developed rhetoric. At that point, they grasped that the key was to talk to a person as directly as possible. Even if they were a group, you were putting the audience first was the thing. Because let's face it, they didn't have many other ways of getting messages out. You had a messenger who would run a message like 250 miles, or they would send smoke signals or something like that. As communication technology evolved, to me, you still were talking to audiences, but the idea of having kind of this direct connection with the audience became kind of more in the background. It became more about the medium in a lot of ways. The medium is the message, Marshall McLuhan once said. You know, once you have things like telegraphs, telephones, television, radio, television, and finally the internet, the fact that with our phones that we can get content when we want it and whatever we want it has made people think, when people are speaking, a lot of them think, oh, it's about me, the speaker, and my content. It's not. It's about the audience, because you can have the greatest content in the world, but if you don't have a delivery that makes them sit up and take notice, all your beautiful content is going to go unheard. And that led me to write the book, where principle number one is prioritize your delivery. In other words, you may have the greatest content, you may be an expert on something, a world authority, but you've got to make your delivery ultimately more important than your content. I'm not saying content is important, but it doesn't matter. The delivery always trumps the content. And I know there's going to be people out there who are going to go, they won't agree with that. But that is the reality. It's the truth. And you know this from working with audiences. The next principle is just put on a show. Because as I said, this is what happens. Whenever you are speaking to any kind of an audience, it could be from a street corner, your deck in your backyard, an actual classic proscenium arch stage, you are a performer. The speaking area is a stage, and the people you are addressing are an audience. And if you want to say Mike's unwritten rule of public speaking is that audiences expect performers on stages to put on shows. It's just the way we are wired. Think about it. The next time you go somewhere, it could be at a church or a synagogue where somebody's on the bima talking. You're thinking, oh, there's kind of a show feeling. Look, it's not talking about riding a tricycle around a boardroom or something, wearing a clown suit. It's talking about how you are managing the emotions of the listener. That's what creates the show. When we say that was a great movie, what do we really mean? We mean that they did a great job of taking me up and down and sideways and raising my hopes and dashing my hopes and rewarding me at the end with a happy ending, something like that. It was an emotional ride. So that is why we say you got to put on a show. The next one is display personality. Because you could be at a conference, which has been going on for hours, like all day, speakers speaking. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, heads are banging off desks. You know, people are falling asleep because they've just been overloaded. They have speech fatigue. But then somebody comes along who's kind of quirky. They may have a funny way of addressing people they know in the audience. Hey, Sam, how you doing? Or when they walk around, they may sort of stumble over their own feet a little bit. They may fumble their words a bit as they're speaking. But they manage to kind of incorporate all this. So it just seems like part of their style. And in the end, of all those speakers, that's the person you might remember most simply because they exhibited these kind of human traits. This ties again into the idea of authenticity, which is very much, it's a buzzword today, but it's also true that audiences want a certain amount of rawness in a delivery. And that's why on LinkedIn, when someone says, well, gee, I've never spoken before, and this is the first time I've heard of doing a video, people go crazy. Right? You know, it's a business. You have to speak concisely and not waste people's time in any kind of a business conversation. But it's also okay to show that you're a human being. That goes farther. That's kind of the currency, more than you realize. The next principle, all right, so that was number three. Number four is feel the fear, but keep on practicing and speaking, because there's no such thing as fearless speaking. I get very mad when I see people promising this in books and their talks and all that. We're wired to feel fear. If I see a tiger coming at me, I know I should run or do something. If I'm watching a movie and it's dark and someone jumps out of the bushes at you in the movie, everybody in the audience is going to scream. Why? Because their perceptual tools are telling them, whoa, there's a threat here. I'm at risk. That's how we're wired. So the whole point of that is if you feel fear, don't fight it. You got to let it in. You have to just almost prepare. I prepare to feel a sense of dread to some degree when I'm speaking publicly.
I remember reading or hearing Pavarotti saying that he used to get nerves before a show, the butterflies in the stomach, and that's Pavarotti. So I think you're right. Otherwise, you just go with the motion, go with the flow, and you don't really give it your all. So,
yeah, absolutely. If you didn't feel some bit of that anxiety, you wouldn't be able to access that extra burst of brain power and energy you get that helps you think two or three steps ahead while you're speaking. You might actually be too relaxed. You might be boring. And that to me is the worst possible sin you can foist on an audience. The next principle, number five, is give them a reason to care, right? Because so often, you know, you hear a person speaking and they're going on and on and on and on and on and on. And you're thinking, okay, I get it. Why am I supposed to care about this? They haven't done their homework trying to figure out what you needed to hear and to feel in order to feel satisfied. They might even be insulting you by telling you things you already know or telling you things that you don't really understand how they fit into the picture of your reality. You have to make your information relevant. You have to roll out these ideas so that the person can see, ah, that's very good. That does address my need at this point. And it could be a pain point. It could be just a thirst for certain knowledge. The next idea is reveal what's inside you. You've probably been at talks when someone suddenly starts getting emotional, or they could be talking about something and they start to get overcome. They said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get so overcome. I'm sorry. And what happens? The audience moves towards you because the person is kind of unleashing emotions they can't help controlling. And when that happens, you get bonding with the audience. So the tip here is that if you really want to be effective, try to set yourself up so you're going to speak in front of something that's going to draw out pure emotion from you. And people say, well, Mike, what if I lose control? I said, you're not going to lose control to the extent that you're going to do something really heinous or something you're truly going to regret. If anything, there'll be a moment when the audience is with you. But that's part of being that stage person I talked about. Kind of letting it all hang out. Although you're not really letting it all hang out. You still are aware of being a speaker on a stage. So that's that principle. And finally, the seventh one is keep things easy to follow. And this is a little more content oriented than those other points, which are more kind of audience or emotional oriented, because it's like driving on a highway. If you miss your road sign, who knows where you're going to wind up? You might get lost, you know, waste of time, bad ending, right? So in speaking, I have to cue you that a turn, a change of direction is coming up, whether it's a change in tone, a change of logic, something. These are what you call signposts. It's through things as simple as saying words like meanwhile, on the other hand, or 2 weeks earlier. This is about taking the listener on a journey. And this is really the ultimate way in which I'm guiding you on that journey is by giving you those signposts so you don't get lost. And that's the seventh principle.
So why do you need the signposts? Why does the audience not just listen to what you're saying?
Well, here's the thing. Unlike audiences for a piece of recorded music, or nowadays even a TV show, you can't play it back. If it goes by, it's gone. Not immediately. So you need to make it so it's as easy for you as possible to follow me. Otherwise, you may not have really grasped what I said the first time. But you can't replay it. I mean, granted, there's a Q&A sometimes where people can ask questions, but you can't bank on using that to try to clear up what your basic storyline was. You have to make the storyline easy to follow from the get-go and all the time.
Definitely. Okay, get that, connecting the threads. And I love the principle where it's around making it clear on how it applies to them or getting them to connect to that situation. So for instance, when I've had lots of larger HR companies ask me to do customer discovery processes where I interview a whole bunch of their clients or potential ideal clients to learn about the industry and their services and stuff like that. But often what I will do is find out what the HR challenges are in that company, but I'll also ask the same person, what does that mean for them in their job? And I think that's really important. And it kind of connects to what you were saying there about helping the listener connected to their own situation. So that might be HR businesses and consultants, when they're talking to people, whether that's through public speaking or through sales, it's to connect it to the role of the people they're speaking to. So for instance, the business owner, they might be worried about legacy. We need to improve the employee engagement and culture of this place because when I leave, they're all just going to say, I left a mess behind. Or the admin officer person, you know, that unless you can get this stuff working, organized and really humming along, you'll never get to work on the juicier stuff that you really want to do and expand your career. So trying to connect it back. And then I love the other bit about bringing the emotion in, because that wouldn't come naturally to me or to think to include that in a speech or presentation. But I can see that working with the storytelling part. Like I, as a young HR manager, I had a team member who'd lost a child. You know, there's emotion that comes with that. And I could share that story and that could connect to the wider thread. Or I've dealt with executives and they've just come out of a horrible board meeting where they've had an argument with the CFO. There are all sorts of opportunities to bring emotion out. So I love those.
It is important to understand that, see, a lot of people have different ideas of what constitutes a story. It has to be a sequential relating of ideas, but you also have to make this a little bit literary, getting back to the idea of stories being crafted for the particular audience. To some degree, you're providing literary and you provide a setting, you provide characters. There's an antagonist, which could be a problem or a villain, if you will. And then there's emotional challenges, there's trouble. And then hopefully there's moments where there's a realization, and it's really good if you have a twist, that things seem to be going one way, but instead they went in a whole nother way. That's what provokes the brain, because the brain likes what's unexpected. That's the difference. You see, random facts, the brain kind of sees in a way, believe it or not, it sounds like the opposite of what it would be, but just ordinary facts and figures are kind of a thing that is familiar to the brain. But the story form is actually unpredictable. And that's what makes the brain work differently to process the story. And that's what makes the story resonate in a deeper way than just facts and figures unloaded in a kind of dump, if you will. And that's one reason why half of the average business speech is forgotten within 10 minutes after the speaker steps off the stage. And then 24 hours later, they've probably forgotten 75% of it. And then a week later, you're lucky if they're even remembering 5% of it. But when you can provoke them in a way that works the mind, it gives you a leg up in that battle to be remembered. So it's very important to remember that. So the story form is really your ally. Now, that's very useful, as you said, when you're trying to communicate about values and history and culture. You know, I love the example of Boeing, the aircraft manufacturer, has been going through certain problems lately. And they have a deep, rich history. And it seems to me, if I were in Boeing's HR department or communication department, and I wanted to rally the troops, I would remind them of their own history, that they made their name initially as a manufacturer of wartime aircraft, the B-17, the bomber, the B-52. These aircraft were vital to the war effort. So when the war ended, Boeing now was losing its primary market. Although there were passenger aircraft around, they were toying with the idea of getting into the idea of the passenger jet market. And the problem with passenger jets is that they tend to be rather noisy in those days. And their president at the time, his name was Bill Allen, he believed in his people, he believed in their culture, to the point that they said, we are going to change our product line to start manufacturing passenger jets. And it wasn't a popular idea. They actually lost money in the beginning. The plane wasn't selling. But what happened is that they had this test pilot or a pilot who was doing a demonstration in an air show, and he actually flipped the plane over just to demonstrate how well it handled. And they were horrified. They said to him, what are you doing? He said, I'm trying to sell airplanes here. And sure enough, though, although that horrified them, that actually boosted sales of the plane. So Boeing 707 became the archetype for the passenger jet that is basically in service today, which came out in the early 50s. But anyway, that's a sign of their culture, their history, that they deal with setbacks. They have the ability to overcome them, even against adversity. So ladies and gentlemen, you know, if you think that we're up against it now, understand that it's in our DNA to prevail against adversity, because we've got the people, we've got the history, we are Boeing. See where I'm going?
I love that. So I know you do coaching for individuals and for organizations, and also for organizations who want their leaders to be able to do what you just did, craft a story that can engage either on the internal communication side of things and or the sales side of things as well, because that's a huge element, obviously, with the pitching and all that sort of stuff. People going for RFPs, RFQs, where you're, you know, having to put in proposals for large organizations and stuff. Those presentations, they could be worth millions. So it's worth thinking about that and getting assistance. So you've walked us through the seven principles for speaking with confidence and connecting with audiences. You've got the book. If people want to learn about you, maybe get help, either coaching or using your services as an organization, or if you're an HR event organizer or something like that, you would like Michael to speak, what should these people be doing next?
My website is michaelbarris.com, michaelbarris, as in Sam.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. And you can connect with me there. You can see a host of tools that I put out on there that are available for your use to use with individuals or within your company. And I also go by mikebarris.com, M-I-K-E-B-A-R-R-I-S.com. It takes you to the same place. And also, one more thing, Ben, my book can be available as a series by going to michaelbarris.com/mini-course. That's /MINI-CORSE. It's about a 9-part series that includes me speaking in instructional videos and just boils down the 7 principles to very quick little 2 to 3 minute bites. And it gives you a good idea of how you can help yourself address your own speaking shortcomings and gives you an idea of how I coach.
That's excellent. So michaelbarris.com and then /mini-course for the serialized version of the book. Go check that out. That's a great example of clever marketing as well and getting you to understand and learn about how Michael can help you or your organization. So I think that's excellent. Michael, you've shared some great insights and some great stories, and I really appreciate you taking the time today. Thank you.
Thanks. I really enjoyed talking to you. You're doing great work. Keep it up.
Thanks for joining us today on A Better HR Business, the podcast that explores the world of HR consulting and HR tech businesses. For show notes and downloads, go to www.getmorehrclients.com/podcast. That's getmorehrclients.com/podcast. Remember to subscribe and share the show with any friends who are busy growing a HR business. Thanks, and see you next time.